Hey everybody, welcome to Beyond the Norm. I'm Norm Lavalette, where we talk about things, improv, comedy, and the business, and all the things surrounding it. I figured this would be a good time to dive in where we've just recently crossed a great milestone, which is our 20th anniversary, our 20 years in business. And that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, 20 years, it's a long time for anything.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and it is. We were talking about it earlier, but, you know, businesses, just like people, grow up. I mean, they go through cycles in their business life. And so I've been fortunate to be a part of all 20 of them.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty cool. So I thought that we could just jump right in because you're both here, Joey and Ari. And you've been around now for a long enough time where you have your own history with it.
Yeah.
Yet you're still, in my eyes, so damn new that you don't know the majority of the history of the place, or yet you're certainly having experience it firsthand. So I thought that this might be a fun time to talk about that, to talk about the 20 years, answer any questions that you have, and just, you know, look back. 20 years of Improv Asylum.
I mean, I've been here for three.
3 years?
So, yeah.
I guess I've been here 5 years. Because people now ask me that from the main stage. It's like, it seems like that's the weird thing. Where I'm like, does that happen to other people in other jobs? Where it's like, you get instant feedback for your job. And then they come up to you and they go, how long have you been doing this?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're at the doctor's, you're not like, how long have you been a doctor? Yeah. You're just like, you're a doctor. I trust you, right?
Yeah.
Except this, they just saw me do it. And they're like, well, how long?
I think people are always just amazed at how good the show is.
I think so.
I think that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
And I get it. It's not a backhanded compliment. But I think so many people, especially if you've never been here before or if you've been here just a couple of times, you're always like, how long have you been doing this? Which means, like, how long have I been missing that this is good?
Okay, see, I've been looking at it like a more defensive way, but that makes sense.
No.
Like, how long have I been missing the boat?
Like, yeah, I think people are shocked. I'm like, have you been doing this for a long time and I just didn't understand it? Like, or did you just start doing this last year?
Yeah.
I think it much more comes from a, usually, this is way better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like, you know, people in t-shirts jumping around like assholes.
Yeah.
And this was really good.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing this?
Yeah.
Right. So that's how I take it.
I got a question. Who have been some of the, I guess maybe like the people who jumped in or crazy guests, you know? I think back to Whose Line Is Anywhere when like Robin Williams jumped on. I remember that being like a moment when I was kind of getting into comedy, being like, oh, there's a different energy. Somebody brought and elevated them and then now they're back to normal. Like, Who have been people who have maybe, and they don't have to be famous, but who've come down there and kind of like elevated or changed a thing?
I remember one night they got Dave Coulier to come down for the midnight show.
Really? Oh, was he over at Laugh?
No, not at all. This was way before Laugh.
Before,
this
okay.
was before Laugh was open. If I remember the story correctly, he was eating dinner at like Luca or something, and it might have been like Kylie Fitzgerald or somebody. Was like, and he was like right in the window. They're like, Dave Coulier is in there. We gotta get him to come down, and they did, and Dave Coulier was great and gracious and came down.
That's
and
really cool.
I don't know if he did any improv with him or not. I imagine that he did, but I remember that one.
I'm dating myself here, but who's Dave Coulier?
Dave Coulier. Oh yeah, that's a great thing. Dave Coulier is Uncle Joey. On Uncle
gotcha.
House.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Uncle Joey.
See, next, if you said Uncle Joey, I would have been with you from the beginning.
Yeah, Uncle Joey, cut it out.
Yeah.
And then subsequently, we did book him for a couple years in a row at Laugh.
That's cool.
And for a while, he was like, he held the record as like most tickets sold there.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Insanity to me.
Yeah.
Like it's like wow,
and it just recognition, right?
It is. It's amazing what name recognition and television will do. I mean,
yeah.
We can say all we want. TV doesn't matter.
I mean, you just had Tom Green, right?
Yeah. We just had Tom Green. He did pretty well. So so we had Dave. Various different things. The one that really blew the roof off of the place was not a celebrity.
I think I know.
I'm sure you probably do. We used to do, you know, when we create a main stage show, we're always reinventing how we present the improvisational portions of the show and how we get information, right? And so for a while there, we were having a lot of fun with running a live camera feed up on the street and doing various different man on the street bits. Yeah. A lot of it had to do with just interacting with people walking by. Everybody's funny. You know, the different men and women who work at Improv Asylum are always funny. So they just have great stuff. And we would live feed it back into the theater. Mm-hmm. And then we would often use that for whatever, you know, to do the improvisation around it. So clearly you're getting a lot of crazies up there on a Saturday night. And one night was up there. I can't remember if it was Doug DiPietro that was out on the street or if it was Richie Moriarty.
I think it was Rich because I think I've seen the clip.
Yeah, but I don't know if he was up there or if he was down. So I can't remember. But I think it was Richie. I think it was Richie Moriarty. And so he ended up talking to somebody up on the street, and they were very flamboyant, and they were a trans person,
yep.
right? But they were decked out in a way to go clubbing and showing a ton of cleavage and short shorts, and you know, just very sexualized in their look, right? Yep. And they had an attitude, and they were really, and it was great. I mean, it's everything that you want, right? Yeah. So they were having a lot of fun, and so I think Rich, and it was crazy, and I think Richie was like, well, why don't you come down? We'll bring you down to the theater. They'll do a reveal, right? And that's going to be really funny. And so they brought the person down, and they were a great sport. And I think they were very drunk as well. And they walked in. It was a sold-out show, you know, at Improv Asylum. So it was on four sides. And when that person walked into the theater, you know, the place erupted. And the person was, like, out on stage and was, like, you know, dancing and moving around and really playing up the crowd. And then just totally exposed their top.
Yeah.
Right. And just totally showed everything that they had.
Yeah.
Right. And we, like, nudity on stage is very much illegal.
Yeah.
In Boston, unless you have a license for whatever. I mean, you know, it's crazy. And the place, the roof, I mean, literally blew up. like, whoa. And like the cast and the actors were like, whoa. And had to get that person and cover them and escort them out. I don't think anything ever has topped that.
And when is that? So that was probably like a day in the life type portion. Like, where was that in the show?
That would have been in the second act, and we would typically use that interview up on the street to go into what we would call our medium form or our montage.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it wasn't like early in the first act, like, how do we finish a show?
No, it was the best. Okay. It was towards the end of the show. That got you out of there.
Yeah,
so that was really good. So that I would say that those would probably be two that come to mind.
Oh, that's really fun. Yeah, I heard a fun fact. I don't know if it's true. You probably know that you can't walk on stage clothed, remove your clothing because that's stripping, but you can walk on stage naked for the art. Like, because I know that some theaters
every city has different ordinances around it.
Gotcha.
But that is a common one.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the case in Boston, but I understand that in Cambridge, that's it. And a lot of times you will get that you can be naked, but you can't take clothes off because that's stripping. Or you can be naked, but you can't be dancing.
Ah.
Or you can dance, but you can't be naked. Or you can dance with somebody else, but you can't dance with just by yourself. Or you can dance by yourself, but you can't dance with other people, right? I mean,
you can dance if you want to.
The night is young, and so am I. So, you know, there's all kinds of crazy. Or like, for the longest time, when we first got our license, when you get the license, you get your entertainment license. And on your entertainment license, it lists all the things you can and can't do, right?
Okay.
You can't just do karaoke. You have to be licensed to do karaoke.
Oh, wow.
You can't just dance. It's very footloose. Like, I don't think we have dancing at Improv
Asylum. Yeah, it says no dancing.
Yeah, it says no dancing, right? Yeah, it's totally footloose, right?
Yeah.
But you can dance if it's part of the theatrical show.
Yeah,
right? And for the longest time, when we first opened up in 1998, it was very explicit. It said no nudity, this or that. Or showing the areola of a female. So what that means is you can put a pasty on.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But the funny thing was, areola was spelt wrong. So it was like, what is you know?
If you can find this, you can't show it.
It was like, it was some crazy thing. But yeah, there's a lot of weird laws like that.
That's cool.
But yeah, 20 years has been a long time. I mean, it's, you know, we've, like I say, these places have a life of their own. And first you're a young kid, and even as a business sense, you don't know what you're doing. you get mature, you try different stuff, you learn hard lessons, you get better. Real life starts to happen to you the older you get, and you deal with that.
Yeah.
And you get a job. And...
When did you start to notice over this past 20 years, because you've said this a lot before, where it's this cyclical thing where a lot of the issues that you run in with each cast or with each show or, you know, just natural stuff, some of it, while a surprise, some of it is like, I've been here before, and I've been here before many times. Like, at what point did you start to notice kind of that cyclical nature or those patterns develop? Is that like a...
Yeah, that was probably, you started really understanding and noticing that somewhere like, you know, 5-8 years in.
Gotcha, you start to see.
Yeah, after, once you went through a couple, quote unquote, generations.
Yes, yeah.
Right, that's what it is. Because if you go through the first generation, everything was new. Exactly. Every issue, fight, you know, perceived, you know, snub was the first time. And then when you see the second generation, it's still a lot of new, and maybe that's just a coincidence. You know, when you see the third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation, you're having that same conversation of, you're right. You know, the cast thinks that the ushers should be more forceful with the audience in terms of quieting them down on Saturday night because they were disrupting the show. But of course, you know, you have to understand that sometimes when the usher goes too early, then the cast gets mad at the usher for saying, "Why are you telling that? You know, I've had that conversation for 20 years, right? Yeah. You know, or you know, I've always said it, like, you know, I do it less and less now because the company's grown and there's more infrastructure to it. But having to sit or mediate issues between actors, I can like clearly remember, like, mm-hmm. at what point, it was probably like, you know, three generations in or whatever, and I remember it was a male and a female, and they had some problem going on, and I had to mitigate it and this and that. And I can remember, like, listening to them and just, like, looking back and forth and going, you know, I knew who they were, obviously, but all I kept saying is, like, you're actor so-and-so from 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're actress so-and-so from 7 years ago. This is amazing, right? So you started to learn that. But what you have to remember, right, is you can't take the attitude of, I've heard this all before.
True, yeah.
Because it's the first time they're dealing with it,
mm-hmm.
right? And you have to, as best you can, treat it with the importance that it is to them at that time.
Yeah.
You know, I always say, like, I live in a Groundhog Day experience, mm-hmm. or life, right? The same things just keep happening over and over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. They're new to you.
Yeah.
And you do it for whatever length of time you're here, mm-hmm. and then you move on. And next year, all the same issues still crop up with all the new people that it's the first time for them.
Yeah.
Like, it goes on. And it's interesting because, by and large, especially when you make the main stage here, but also NXT too, I think, now to a degree, it's everybody's first professional job in entertainment.
Yeah.
And I'm stuck with that. Yeah. I have to deal with everybody's first professional job in entertainment for the rest of my life, right? and then when people go on to those next things, it's always fun because I do get the experience of people constantly coming back and going, like, hey, sorry about how I was. You know? No, but you can't be any other way because how do you know what you don't know, right? True. But then when you go on to New York or LA and then you realize that, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't have gotten so upset that we have bottled water instead of a water bubbler, or vice versa, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So you learn that.
It is, I don't know if humbling is the right word, but it's nice to hear too when people come back, you know, from who prior main stage or just people who are here and they went to New York or LA to come back and be like, well, you don't really get this in those places. I guess now with New York, but like that idea of like you walk in as an actor. You open the door from the green room, and there's a new audience. And then you do your show, and then you go back, and then there's a new audience, and you're like...
You get this at almost no places.
Yeah, you
can count, you know, on one hand. You get it at Improv Asylum, you get it at Second City, you get it at the Groundlings.
Yep.
You get it at a four-day weekend in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah.
And probably, or probably Acme Theater in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Like that's it. You don't get it anywhere else.
Yeah.
And And what I mean by that is, yes, that audience, but also that ability to just walk in, have an audience, do your show, and walk out.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to sweep the floors, take the tickets, try to beg all your friends to come see your show yet again, which they definitely don't want to do.
Yeah.
Right? No, you don't. It's a handful of places, and it is unique. And until you leave it at any of those places, right? You get the same experience if you're in Chicago and Second City, and you go to LA and New York.
Yeah.
You know, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, like, Matt Catanzano has always said, like, in LA, you got audiences of, like, 20 people, and that's a good audience.
Sure. And that's an industry town with very deep talent. Now, the Groundlings pull an audience.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll get that experience of the Groundlings. But after that, not really.
Yeah.
So what else? What questions have you ever had about 20 years here? Years. What has changed? What is the same? What, you know? I can say that for sure what has changed is the shows are infinitely better.
Oh.
I mean, I was going through tapes and digitizing everything, and I saw, like, a song parody of Dancing Queen called Burger King, and just comparing that to, which was, it was funny.
You didn't see just a parody song of Dancing Queen called Burger King. You saw the original musical closer of Improv Asylum.
Oh, that was it? That was
you saw
Gen 1.
A piece of history, my friend. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the shows are infinitely better, right? I mean, there's stuff that was being done back then I wouldn't make a grad show.
Right.
The difference, though, it's not to say that those people weren't as talented as you are today.
Yeah.
That's not the case at all. What you are doing today lives on the shoulders and backs of everything that we learned and came before you.
Yeah.
Right? So when we started doing Improv Asylum, we opened the doors and we said, well, we think that there can be, you know, a more professional way of doing this, right? And we can do improv. Oh, and we also like sketch. So we were also going to write stupid sketches and just do them.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so we did it. And what made the difference, though, was it was the first time that stuff was ever done here in this city and together like that. And that's what made it amazing.
Yeah.
Right? It's like when you look back at SNL, everybody says, like, that first cast, that first season, mm-hmm. that it'll never be rivaled. Well, they are correct. It'll never be rivaled because it was the first. And that's what made it the legendary best. If you objectively watch the material, I think it would be difficult to say that was the best. But what made it the best was it was groundbreaking because it was the first. There was no reference point. Nobody had ever done it. So when you're doing a musical closer now, you are living on 100, if not 1,000, improvements and iterations from the concept of doing a musical closer.
Yeah.
And that's what you have. But the shows are, I mean, better. Now, if you took those same people that were in the original cast and they were here now, well, they would be benefiting from that as well. They'd be just as good. So it's not a talent thing, but it's definitely the shows are, I mean, so much better. And I hope that in 5 and 10 years' time, we can look back and say, oh, the shows are so much better now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they should be. They should always be iterating up.
True.
So I think you see a lot of that.
What's something that you, like, could do from at the beginning, but, like, you just can't do now? Is there anything?
Oh God!
I mean, I'm sure there's, like,
so much, so much. I mean, look, the sensitivity to material on stage is completely different now than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah,
and it is now than it was 40 or 50 years ago. I don't know if that's a good thing. I think on some levels it's an absolutely good thing. It's a great thing, right? It was very common practice in comedy and on stages is to play affected gayness for laughs.
Mm-hmm.
That was just, that was common.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable anymore.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's fantastic. Where I think we lose some things, though, is do we run to the other side of the ship where anytime something is said, if you want to explore, let's say, something in the racial realm.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, oh, you can't do it. Okay, well, I guess. But does that mean that we can never talk about perceived deeper mm-hmm. things. You know, could a show, it always goes back to, and I'm not the, you know, original, and there's nothing original in me saying this,
yeah.
but could a show like All in the Family exist today? That's the show with Archie Bunker,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
As a racist,
yeah.
as a blowhard,
yeah.
who at the end of each episode was shown to be an idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Well, I don't think that show could exist today because I think there would just be a segment of society, and I don't say that they're wrong,
mm-hmm.
that would say, you just can't say those things.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know if a show like that can exist. So I think there's that. There's mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Again, I don't know that it's better or worse. I think by and large, it's all better.
Mm-hmm.
It's better that a lot of stuff has changed. So you couldn't do that. That kind of stuff. I think that's probably the number one.
Mm-hmm.
The number one thing.
So I was wondering, besides like the, because we've already touched on the fecal flood and stuff like that, yeah. right? What are some things where, it, like, I guess when the renovations happened, you guys had to do the shows over at like a church, right?
Well, we did the show over in the back performance room of the Hard Rock Cafe in Faneuil Hall.
Yep.
But then the renovation and the licensing, shockingly, wasn't done on time. So we had to bridge a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. And so we managed to, I think I did it. I don't even remember anymore, but I think it was me. I put together a deal. So we were doing shows at the, Old South Meeting House.
Mm-hmm.
And that was wild.
Yeah.
That was wild. That was really cool. So we did shows there for like 2 or 3 weeks at the Old South Meeting House.
Yeah.
And again, that was fun because, I think I was directing the show at that time. And what you had to do, right? Obviously, that's going to be a very scary proposition. It's going to be a foreign experience for the actors who are already, by their nature, you know, skittish deer running through the forest, right? Yeah. So, what was that?
Yeah.
What was that?
Something right? different.
Something different. Ears go up. Ah, I can't do it, right? Yeah, you can, right? But it was really fun. As a director, my job, or a director's job, is to show them that they can.
Yeah.
Do that. And I remember, you know, they had the stage and the riser and stuff like that. I'm like, let's just run around in this and play. We can't try to do an Improv Asylum show here like we do at Improv Asylum. We've got to use this thing. We've got to use this space. And if you're there, if you've ever been to the Old South Meeting House, there's like the stage or whatever. And then there's like a big pulpit balcony up above it.
Yeah.
And we happened to be doing some kind of debate opener, I think at the time, an improvised debate opener. So I said, well, let's do this. Let's use the space. Let's have the moderator go up there and moderate from that. I think it was Brian O'Hara, if I remember correctly. And so like we used the entire space and we then made it fun to actually do a show for the venue, not just do a show in a venue.
That's cool.
So that was pretty. So that was pretty cool.
Any other ones where it's like something happens where it's, because I feel like the theater stays open. If the T's are run, you know what I mean? Like, unless there's like crazy, crazy inclement weather, I feel like the theater tries to stay open. Has there been any times where it's like, not the fecal flood, but something else that you guys had to pivot or do like this Old South Meeting House?
There's always been a lot of vomit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there just is. And there was a run a few years back. I don't know if it was like the norovirus or something was going on, where just everybody was just puking, man. It wasn't drunk puke. Like we know the drunk puke.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of easier to deal with.
Yeah.
But the sick puke?
Yeah.
There's just something more wrong with
that.
You know what I mean? Like, you're drunk. Get away from me.
Yeah.
Sick puke, you might have infected me with something.
Yeah,
right?
True.
And there was a run where everybody was throwing up.
The audience?
Yeah, the audience. Okay, gotcha. The audience.
We just dealt with that a couple days ago.
Yeah. Well, it just happened the other day, right? But that's what made me think of it. But there was a run. And I remember this one time. It's happened a couple times. But one time, the vomit was so terrible and the smell was so much. I mean, you got to stop the show. You're like, you know what? We're going to take an intermission right now. Yeah, we're going to get this stuff cleaned up and bring everybody back. But the vomit, especially like that kind of that sickness vomit, would induce other vomiting. So like one person would throw up and they like throw up on the person in front of them. And that person would throw up and like everybody's throwing up. And
it was
like, so there have been those times. That was good. I have stopped the show and taken actors off the stage when I felt that it was a dangerous situation.
Oh wow!
I did that once.
Yeah.
Did it a couple times.
But dangerous situation, like they were sick, or like they were like.
No, we're the audience, right? When you do these shows as a performer, as a live performer, you're incredibly vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, people lose sight of it. They the audience sees it as they process in their mind like they're still watching a screen or their phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
That ain't the case. You're very vulnerable. You know, and audiences get crazy and stuff like that.
I didn't realize it until we did the Trump show, and then there was that moment where being on stage, and then because I remember I was like, oh, the guy who played Trump, David Carl, would be like a little, he'd have a little more skittishness than us, and I was like, what's he worried about? And then it wasn't until somebody was like, you, Mr. Trump, you are a bit, and I was like, this person thinks this is Trump, yeah, and this person is definitely unstable,
yeah,
and they are feet away from him. So I'm sure. Like, oh wow.
Well, that was instant the Trump show, Trump Takes on Boston.
Yeah.
One of the features is you could debate.
Yes.
David,
yes,
Carl's Donald Trump, and you did. You saw it in people's eyes, and you were ruining this country, and I would never. And you know, you can be, and everyone's like, hey,
yeah,
that ain't Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that guy fucking hates, yeah, Donald, yeah, Trump, yeah, right? And then there's the other side of it where that guy came up on stage and we had to, like, I literally had to go up on stage and take, yeah, him off, right? Because, yeah, you don't know, is that person going to pull a gun? And that, yeah, wasn't, you know, stuff like that. And so there was one time that we were on stage, it was a long time ago because I was in the cast,
yeah,
so it tells you how long ago it was. And it was a very rowdy cast, whatever. But at some point, somebody threw down onto the stage a jar of KY jelly. And they threw it down on the stage. And, you know, obviously I it's easier for me to do because I have the prerogative, because I have some sort of leadership role, right?
Yeah.
But I remember in that instance, I remember saying, you know what, everybody? I'm like, we're going to stop the show. Actors are going to go backstage. Ushers, you're going to come in. And you're going to remove that guy.
Yeah.
And the usher's like, what? What? You know, like, you know, because the ushers are always like, you know, 18, 19 year old people that are like, I just want to take free classes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then I even said it again. So I'm like, because you don't realize it, but we're in a very vulnerable situation and it can be dangerous. We can't have that. We're not going to perform for that. We're going to go, once that guy's out of here, we'll pick it back up.
Yeah.
And you know, there's always that moment where people are like, oh crap, you know, does it ruin the thing? It never ruins the thing if you handle it right.
Yeah.
Right. So person's removed, bark you, this, that, the other thing and stuff like that. Came back out on stage after a break and looked around. I'm like, you know, just look around the audience and you go, all right, you guys ready to do this now? And the audience was like, yeah! And I'm like, let's go, because they want the asshole out too.
True, yeah.
But yeah, I took the entire cast off the stage that one time.
That's interesting.
Who fills a jar? Anyway.
Who? I don't know. It's crazy.
Well, I'm assuming that they bought it. They bought a jar.
Yeah, I don't think they filled an artisanal jar with KY jelly.
I guess I was picturing just like a mason jar. Like a workbench just like squirting this jelly into a mason jar, yeah, closing.
I don't think that would ruin the show.
I think the big question is who goes to a comedy show with KY jelly,
yeah, yeah,
to then throw?
But you know, you see a lot of that. There was another time where, you know, you get dicks, right? You get assholes. Yeah. I'd say they're 75% male. You know, but there's a 25% that is not male,
yeah,
or 30% depending, right? So there's a nice split. We equality in people who are awful. I remember one time, an actress on stage and whatever, she leaned over and sometimes your shirt will blouse out,
yeah,
and so you can see down a person's shirt. And somebody like made some like nice tits or something like that, and you know, all you have is each other on the stage. That's,
yeah,
all you have.
Yeah.
And you cannot let that pass.
Yeah.
To let somebody be bullied or humiliated or whatever it is. And the woman that they said it to wasn't humiliated or bullied. She was one of the most badass performers that ever worked on the stage.
Yeah.
It was Amy Rader, you know, and she was,
I've heard stories.
She didn't need anybody sticking up for her, right?
Yeah.
So no way was it that. But as a cast, you need to do that,
yeah,
right? And it was one of the best moments of my career because we all came around together and somehow we crafted the scene to sing a song and make it a musical scene. Amy was really good at musical improv. But the basic refrain that the entire cast continue to sing and we got the entire audience to sing with us was aimed at this guy and it just kept going, ended with get the fuck out,
yeah,
blah, 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 get the fuck out. out, and the entire audience was like, get the fuck out, and finally got so humiliated he left.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was a good one. They all sound like so combative. The good ones.
Well, no, I mean, I feel like there's that sense of yelling out in a crowd, and it's hard to detect who that person is.
Yeah.
So you're kind of, your rage is like a swath, and then you're trying to figure it out, but then that you're losing the eye. So I think it's a tightrope walk.
One of my favorite Day in the Life bits I've ever seen was you interviewed a guy who just gave nothing, and then. He just was like, yeah, I just hang out at home and masturbate. And then the scene was just like you on a chair, miming that, and then Dan pulled the lights.
We did kind of give it to that. But I guess that's an example.
but that's deserved, right? Yeah, yeah. That's deserved. And I think what happens, what we also have to remember is we get so caught up in all the shows that we do because we do so many of them.
Yeah, oh yeah.
The audience, well, you know, even our most, you know, fervent fans, how many shows do they come to? 3 a year?
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? So it's new to them.
Yeah.
And so we have to be careful about becoming jaded against that. And then the other part is we also have to remember, we also tell them to yell stuff at us.
True.
Right? We can't lose our minds when they don't yell exactly the thing that makes us feel good and that we can do. Like, we're the ones doing it. And there's nothing more maddening to me when we're like, oh, these bunch of assholes on stage, and then unprompted, we're doing scenes about anal beads.
Yeah,
like no, you can't. You know, so yeah. it's both of those things. Like, why do they yell that? Well, why did you do that?
Yeah,
right. So there's that. So I think those are moments that you remember mm-hmm. is when you come together. I think the unexpected parts for me about doing this for as long as I have, you know, when I started it, I was no different than you or anybody else. I wanted to do comedy.
Yeah.
Creative space myself. All right, well, you know. I'll do it myself if other people aren't letting me do it. Yeah. Get to have a cool bar in the city to hang out with in your 20s. Those were very good times. Right? What I certainly never expected was the deep, deep emotional connections people would make with the place and with each other.
Yeah.
Like, that was never. I would have never understood that. We've even talked about it. I mean, I think in so many ways, oftentimes this place means more to you guys or for the people that go through than it does even to me.
Yeah.
And I never would have expected or known that was going to happen. And I think that's both gratifying and also shocking.
Yeah.
You know, so I think you have those moments there. And in 20 years, what has changed is the operation of the business. It's more professional.
Yeah.
In some ways it's probably less fun. For me.
I was going to say for you.
Okay. Yeah, for me. You know, I mean, in a lot of ways. Because my relationship is different.
Yeah.
But, spoiler alert, life is less fun at 40 than 20 for most people.
What?
You know, I mean, or at 25 or 45.
Yeah.
It's spoiler alert. Yeah. Maybe, not for everybody. Some, you know, if you're Leonardo DiCaprio or George Clooney, you're killing it, man. Yeah, but you know, so you learn that, and that's fine. You know, because they go through their own, lives. But what is really great is that you do all of a sudden have this incredibly large, you know. The term is thrown around, I think, too easily and too loosely, but an extended family to a degree. Yeah. And to watch people come together, you know, through the most emotional moments of anybody's lives, marriages, births, deaths, divorces. Yeah. I've seen it all. Seen every last bit of it on the stage and the people work here. And that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
I think my first shift as an usher 3 years ago was there was a proposal and which... So just the I always found it funny that like somewhere in the background of all of these videos that they'll show to their grandkids, I'm just standing their first day on the job like, is this happening all the time? What is going on?
Is this a common occurrence?
Yeah,
it happens a lot, you know, or a fair amount. People have literally held weddings down there. There have been people that loved it so much they wanted to be married on that stage.
Yeah.
Not people who worked here.
Yeah.
Audience members. So yeah, I think that's what it is. And when you get frustrated or when I get frustrated or, you know, wondering, is it all worth it or stuff like that, you know, you do. You take a step back and say, well, I've been so fortunate to be part of a singular experience that almost nobody else in the world will ever get to be a part of. And when you remember that, you're like, all right, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool stuff. And then, you know, you'd ask the question, does, or we talked about it, I think the last podcast, does 20 years get you anything?
Yeah.
No. I think it gets you tonight a $20 bill if you're here. Yeah. And that's it, right? It doesn't get you 21.
Yeah.
You know, it's what do we do? What are we going to do in the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years? What do I hope? So, but it's not guaranteed.
Yeah. And I guess I don't mean guarantee. I guess I maybe more of like, you know, is it like a confidence thing? Like from year 1 to year 2 versus year 21 to year 22, for example.
Well, I think certainly if you've been around doing this for 20 years, you have to have a certain belief and confidence and you know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not going to stop working. Like the entertainment and the comedy is not going to stop working tomorrow.
Yeah.
We know how to do this. Yeah. Right? I mean, think about it. We take a perfectly good show.
Yep.
Right? That we work very hard to do. Selling out. I mean, it's doing great. There's just people clamoring to see it. And after 3 to 4 months, we completely dump it and start from scratch to create something new that we don't know if it's going to work or not. Mm-hmm. But of course, we do know it's going to work because we've been doing it for 20 years and we understand the process, mm-hmm. right? So you know that part's going to be there. So you have that confidence. You have to have the confidence to be able to say, this is how we know we're going to be successful, and if we keep doing this, we will. You also have to have the flexibility of your mind and imagination to say, but everything changes, and so how do I make sure that I don't fall into the trap of, well, this is how we do it.
Yes.
Right? Because that's death of innovation, that's death of vibrancy, and you kind of lose a little bit of soulfulness, right? So for me, I've always said, in 5 years or in 10 years from now, I want people to come back who've been here 5 or 10 years ago mm-hmm. and see the main stage show and say, oh my God, this is what I remember. Oh, but there's something different about it. Like if you were to see those first shows 20 years ago, these shows would look radically, radically different. But there'd be a whole lot that looks the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A whole lot.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. But you have confidence. Mm-hmm. You end up dealing with new problems and you have to learn how to do that.
Where do you see, I guess, that innovation side, like just kind of projecting it out for the next couple of years? Like what is that thing that you might be keen on, might fit into that, you love it, it makes you money, or like what's the next thing that you try to start to poke to be like, does this add? Or
I have always been very interested in how do we treat the performers like professional athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're
going to start drug testing you.
Oh boy!
Yeah, to make sure you smoked the marijuana to do lit night. You are faking it. Yeah, that's totally the reverse. Like you're not high.
Yeah.
Get back there and get high. Yeah. That's what they're coming to see, right? No, but this idea, right? I've always had, which is, if you get to a certain point, take money out of it or whatever, is, well, you know, what if you looked at this as a holistic thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because what would happen if not only were the actors doing the shows, but you were attending to, just like professional athletes, the holistic self of somebody, right? What if, I would love to do a show where not only were you rehearsing and creating shows, but you had a nutritionist and you had prescribed gym time.
Yeah.
And you had yoga and you had, you know, the ability to, you know, mandatory speaking with therapists because they all need to speak with therapists, right? And I don't want to have to hear it.
Yeah.
And you put all that together like they do in a professional athlete and say, what would that look like? How would that affect the show? Would it make it better? Would it make it worse? But I would love to figure out a way to move towards that because ultimately being a performer is such a difficult thing. And to do it, you by and large, most people tend to ignore other parts of their life out of necessity or out of just the way life goes. And so what would it look like if you could take care of an entire, you know, the person in the entire show? I think that there's a future in that.
Yeah, well,
you know,
that work-life balance is, I mean, as the newest member of the cast, that's something that I think has been one of the hardest parts for me. It, you know, like, okay, well, where do I get the gym time? Because we're in process now. And now I feel like shit because I didn't go to the gym. And now my stage present. And, oh, I got to have time to write. So I can't. You know what I mean? It's right. like managing all that, which is a champagne problem. But
it isn't a champagne problem if you take away the fact that don't romanticize this. This is work. And you value the worker. Your value to me, and this is why I always advocate for paying the actors, right?
Yeah.
Whereas in places like New York, you don't need to do that. I do in New York, but you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
And my whole point is, I value your work just as much as I would if you were an insurance agent. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not offering less to the world, so how do we approach you and get there? And I look at it as like, you know, again, if you look at, let's say, the Patriots, right? The New England Patriots, they take care of, this isn't just me being nice. You're the asset.
Yeah.
Right? The actor is the asset. The player is the asset. So could I increase the value that I get out of that asset if it was thought of in this entirely holistic thing? Now, the asset, I know this sounds cold and everyone's going to be like, see, that's why he's kind of like, shut up. You know what I'm talking about. You understand the context of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you choose not to understand it, then fine, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
But then the asset also greatly benefits, right? Because wouldn't that be great? Is if you had a regimented schedule and this is when your rehearsal is, this is when your gym is, this is when your nutrition is, this is the menu that you're going to be laid out, this is how you're going to eat by and large, and we're going to measure that to make sure you're feeling okay, good, healthy, energetic, and strong to deliver the best shows possible.
Yeah,
that's where I would like to see go in like somewhere in the next 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the kind of innovation. Thinking very differently about that.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can get there. I think we can.
It's like 5 years, like six of like the almost like androids, like per and they're all wearing track suits. It's all the same, just delivering like perfect comedy.
As soon as you can be replaced with robots, I will absolutely do it. Yeah. I can't even wait.
Their optic work is just flawless, and then they transform into different things.
No issues.
Yeah,
no issues. Yeah, that's all it comes down to. No issues.
Yeah. The NXT cast as the chairs.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't have to have meetings and listen to a robot, you know, say that they're concerned that they're not in as many sketches, or none of they don't have any good improv representation. Robots don't do that.
No, they don't.
So I think that's the stuff that I'm looking forward to. Because look. This work is as old as time. It's standing up in front of the fire and saying some stuff in front of people.
Yeah.
In the village, in the cave, or whatever. That's not going to change. But I think you can do a lot of that. And then I think the other thing that I'm super excited about is to see where everybody goes. You know, wherever they are at now. And some of that means the business, but a lot of it means, you know, I now know people that I've known for 20 years, 22 years. Well, I'm curious to see what that's going to look like in 20 years from now.
Yeah.
So it's I'm very fortunate to be a part of this.
Yeah.
Very lucky. That's it. Any other questions?
I can't think of anything. Good.
Well, if you do, you know, email them or call or text or whatever it is that you do. But I will say this to you guys, and that anybody else who has ever been a part of Improv Asylum who may listen to this, none of this exists without all of you. None of it.
Even you.
And I want you to think about that. You. Yes. You. Me, you ask? Yeah. You. So thank you. Thank you for everybody. And I look forward to another 20 years. East Coast of Florida, the States can see.